You may be seated. Our third case this morning is 2014-1984 and 2014-2064, State of Ohio versus Chesley Berry. For the appellant, Mr. Hardwick.
Thank you. Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Knowing that you committed a crime is different from knowing that an investigation into that crime is likely. And Ohio's tampering with evidence statute makes that distinction because the person is only guilty of tampering if they conceal evidence of a crime knowing that an investigation into that crime is likely. But what this unmistakable crime doctrine, I should say so-called doctrine, because it's a creature solely of Ohio intermediate appellate courts, found nowhere else in the nation if I could even find cases that have the words unmistakable and crime next to each other. What that doctrine does is it effectively replaces the statutory, legislatively created element of knowing that an investigation is likely with the judicially created element of knowing that you committed a crime that's unmistakable.
Mr. Hardwick, does our Straley case in any way impact the decision here?
Yes, it definitely does. It definitely helps because it analogized to the witness tampering statute and saying that just knowing that an investigation or a court case might exist is not sufficient. You actually have to show that there will be one that's likely. And so I think under that doctrine, looking at it that way, it does resolve this case.
And your client currently is serving a sentence, correct?
Correct.
And that was for possession or?
Trafficking.
Trafficking.
Yes.
Right.
She the total amount of heroin, I believe, was 56 grams, and she was to receive 3 grams of that about a day and a half. She's an addict. She was 19 and had been using heroin since, I believe, age 13.
If you change the fact pattern here, to a reliable informant that told the law enforcement folks that these three individuals are traveling and describe the vehicle headed from point A to point B and known to be transporting the heroin. So they stopped the car. Let's assume that they have a probable cause to stop the car, and they search and they don't find it. Does that change it? Does she know that at that point she knows she's committing a crime, and now she also knows they're aware of it and investigating it.
Well, I think what Straley says is you look at her knowledge at the time of the concealment, and at the time of her concealment, she didn't know that when someone had told the police that, then she wouldn't have any
knowledge. So it's her knowledge at the time of concealment.
Correct. And that's one way that Straley helps this case, but there is still something for this court to decide, and that's because the unmistakable crime doctrine still exists on the books, even still in the Fourth District, and In the 6th, the 7th, the 10th, and the 11th districts still say that actual knowledge of a likely investigation, they use the words either irrelevant or unnecessary.
I think I feel a little bit defensive about Schmitz in the beginning of Unmistakable Crime because I was on that panel. So in defense of that opinion, it wasn't just thrown out by Judge Bryant as it's an unmistakable crime and that's enough. There really was a sufficiency kind of analysis. It wasn't an irrebuttable presumption. It was an inference that then you could go forward with additional evidence. Am I right about that?
Yes, and the way it initially came out is it still was, I think, a needless and problematic diversion from the language of the statute, but it was actually harmless in the facts of those cases because when you commit a murder, the jury can infer from the fact that that's a crime likely to be reported and infer that the defendant knew that. But in that case, at least there was some evidence of this. And it's an example of of respectfully mistaken reasoning that still got you to the same place, but it, as this case shows, it can get you to the wrong place as well. And it's simply unnecessary. It confuses, does nothing but confuse the jury for them to hear about unmistakable crimes, because that's, it's an argument, it's a fair argument if they want to make it at closing argument, say, hey, look, this is unmistakable, someone's going to report this.
But speaking of an instruction, though, the court did instruct on the tampering statute, which includes knowing that an official investigation was in progress. Was that enough? And if it's not enough, obviously in your view it's not enough, what instruction would be sufficient?
Well, first of all, the reason that instruction was extremely problematic in this case is because then the court went on to define knowing and said that you automatically know that there's an investigation if your crime was unmistakable. And counsel's cross-examination, the prosecutor's cross-examination and closing argument made it absolutely clear that he asked her, so your crime was unmistakable. You knew that trafficking heroin was illegal, right? Yes, so it's unmistakable. Yes, so it's an unmistakable crime. Yes.
So in terms of us telling trial courts what kind of instruction would be appropriate, would it have been appropriate for the court to just stop at the tampering statute?
Right, yet there's no reason to depart from the clear language of the statute. I know there are some statutes that require some explanations to a jury. I believe Justice Pfeiffer wrote a 307-word dissent regarding one of those statutes at one point. Some of those, but this isn't one of them. This is a statute that is clear on its face. Did you conceal evidence knowing that an investigation is likely? There's no reason to get into unmistakable crime. That does nothing.
Was there a motion for a directed verdict on this particular count?
No, I believe no, and that's why I'm here under two other areas. I raise this under plain error and ineffective assistance of counsel. And I know this court is cautious with plain error, but this does affect the outcome of the trial because there was no evidence whatsoever that she knew that investigation was likely when she hid this evidence at the beginning of the trip. And the
counsel, I'm a little, at that point, when she started on her criminal activity, the concealment, you say there was no evidence that she knew an investigation was going to unmistakably follow, inevitably follow, would happen with certainty, correct?
No, I'd say it's likely. That's the standard.
Likely to happen. Well, there's not too many criminals that go about the initial stages of their criminal activity saying, it's likely I'm going to be caught. It's likely there's going to be an investigation here. Is that correct?
I think that's...
I mean,
yes.
Criminals are not the smartest people in the world, but even they would understand, or some would understand, that this is a risk not worth taking.
Yes, and there's a difference between knowing that something might happen, as this court said in Straley, and knowing that it's likely to happen.
So
and,
could you face this charge, you go out and murder someone late night on the street, nobody, no witnesses, and then you throw away the weapon. Would that be this offense?
It could be. I think that at that point there would be a jury question as to whether the defendant knew that an investigation was likely. And there are unfortunately some murders that don't go investigated. The person who was killed was homeless or not known to people who would miss that
person.
Well,
but if they've got a couple bullets in them, there's probably going to be an investigation.
Right. Assuming, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's always an investigation. How far it gets is you know the question here.
Now, once there's some discussion in the record that she's in the back seat of the cruiser and there's some conversation that's overheard that indicates that she's concerned now about the drugs that she has secreted.
Right.
At that point, if she continues to deny, would that be the violation?
That would be a closer call. I think it'd be better charged as obstruction if she lied. But in here, the state's bill of particulars, I do see how from the facts, they could make a claim that she didn't, that she wasn't immediately truthful. But the bill of particulars said she was pulled over, she told them, and she told them about that she had the drugs, and then she they use the word voluntarily in the thing, voluntarily turned them over. So that this case is tried to this jury, the crime was the initial concealment. It was not the potential crime of initially misleading the officer.
So they took the approach at trial that she actually acknowledged and submitted to the examination that led to the evidence.
I think there's one mention at one point, the state one time mentioned, if I remember right, that, hey, wait a minute, she continued lying up till the end. But that was the way it went to the jury, and the way it went to the bill of particulars was, is this an unmistakable crime? Did you know that what you're doing was illegal? Yes, therefore it was an unmistakable crime, therefore she knew.
So, and if we agree with you in reverse, she's still got a 6-year sentence that has to serve, or as much of it as
correct.
If she doesn't get out for good time or those kind of things.
Right, yeah, so this is a mandatory, the underlying sentence is 6 years mandatory, so she serves that day to day or very close to day to day.
This is a 3-year tack on for the
correct.
The concealment.
Correct.
Okay.
Your singular focus is on this charge of tampering with evidence, am I right?
Correct.
And is there an implication of the defendant's right to remain silent that comes into play in the course of this investigation?
I believe there was a motion to suppress, but that's long since passed. That issue's long since passed at this point for her to raise.
Well, if someone involves himself in this kind of activity, concealing the heroin in a body cavity, is it the obligation of that defendant upon some apprehension by a policing agency to disclose that? Or does that defendant have a right to remain silent and have the state prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt?
Yes, she has the right to remain silent. She doesn't have the right to affirmatively
Pardon me?
Yes, I'm sorry. She has the right to remain silent, but she doesn't, I have to concede she does not have the right to affirmatively mislead the police officers. That's not within the right to remain silent.
So if they asked her, do you have any drugs concealed in any body cavity?
She can say, she can take the Fifth Amendment and say, I reserve the right to remain silent, or she could not answer, but.
Well, if we expand it from a body cavity to some secret compartment in a vehicle, and then police officers begin to ask drivers, are you carrying any drugs in any compartments of this vehicle? Are you suggesting that those individuals must identify the location and the drugs, or they would be convicted of tampering with evidence? Is that your argument?
No, they have the right to remain silent. They have the right not to answer the questions. I don't know the U.S. Supreme Court case off the top of my head, but to concede, the U.S. Supreme Court has firmly established that the Fifth Amendment does not include the right to affirmatively to lie to the police officers. You can stay quiet. When you ask, do you have drugs, you don't have to answer, but if you do answer, you have to say something that's true, otherwise that itself can be a crime.
Well, in this instance, didn't the state trooper inquire of her?
Yes, she did, and if the state had brought this as an obstruction charge, then we'd be here and that's how they brought it to the jury, we'd be here in a very different posture. But the state's bill of particulars, and even through the Court of Appeals, the entire theory of the state of Ohio was that her crime was the concealment when she quote unquote stuffed it was the word that they used repeatedly at trial.
But I don't,
so did
I
that
guess,
occur in Cincinnati?
Occurred in Middletown.
All right, it occurred in Middletown, and that's the tampering?
That's where they held the tampering was.
All right, and so the tampering wasn't at the time of the situs of the arrest when she continued the concealment, that wasn't it?
And it was not the affirmative misleading. I think I'll let the state speak for themselves on whether she was still committing the crime ongoing from the initial concealment. But under Straley, you look at the initial concealment. You don't look at, well, what is she, if she still has it concealed? You still have to show that.
So that your argument then is at the time that she concealed it, according to the state's theory when she was in Middleton, she did not know that there was a likely investigation.
Correct.
And therefore, she's not guilty of that crime.
Correct.
All right, thank you.
Counsel, I thought it was helpful in your brief that you listed out all the cases, the appellate court cases that have looked at this and used the language unmistakable crime. But what you did was also distinguish the Fourth District, that at least in all of the cases leading up to this one, the courts had at least identified when a jury could simply infer that the defendant knew that an investigation was likely. So is the Fourth District here an outlier? Do we just need to look at the language that the Fourth District used? Or are you asking us to go back and look at all of those other appellate jurisdictions to say, even using that word, the terms unmistakable crime, and still giving that question to the jury, that that is also inappropriate?
Right, and I guess I'm arguing both in the alternative. I mean, this court should just tell the trial court, stop using this phrase. It was a harmless mistake when we made it, but it's been taken too far. It has no, it's just been taken out of context and it misleads the jury. But if this court doesn't want to go that far, it should at least say what the Fourth District does now concede is this should be, quote, limited to areas where the defendant knew, where the crime was unmistakable to someone likely to report it. And even that's still problematic because, in theory, a report doesn't necessarily mean an investigation. You report a theft in Columbus of less than, I believe, $2,000. I found this out. They're not going to investigate it. I mean, that's just, a report does not mean automatic investigation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Willis.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. I'm Jay Willis here on behalf of the Scioto County Prosecutor's Office on behalf of the state of Ohio. I want to address a few of the issues that came up during appellant counsel's presentation here. First of all, regarding the statement that there was no evidence at the time of concealment, I would disagree with that statement. If you review the transcripts, there was ample evidence at the time of concealment.
Ample evidence of what?
That Chelsea Berry knew that there was likely to be an investigation.
What is that evidence?
And I will compare this with the facts to Straley. Straley had totally different facts. In the Berry case, Chelsea Berry was the driver of the vehicle. She had three co-defendants. She was handed the item to conceal, which was a baggie containing heroin and cocaine, inside the vehicle, and told by her co-defendants, why else do you think you're here other than to conceal this for us in case we get pulled over? They may not have used those exact words. I'm paraphrasing.
Well, in case, is that the same as?
I think that equates to likely. I don't know that they. I don't know that she said that they said in case, but I would equate that to that they knew that there was likely to be an investigation if they were pulled over. That was the whole purpose for her being.
Don't you think that's just in the world of drug transportation, a standard operating procedure?
It is, and that's a problem. That's a problem that we deal with every day with these types of cases. And I would submit to the court, Your Honor, that there is not a gray area here with drugs. What other reason would she have had to conceal this than to impair the value of this in a likely investigation?
But counsel, I guess that's my problem with this whole case. You say we do this all the time. What exact value does tampering with evidence have in a possession of drugs case? Everybody who has drugs in their hand on their person is in possession, correct?
Correct, correct.
If they put it in their pocket, are they now tampering with evidence?
Well, I think you have to look at all three elements of the statute. This question that we're here on today really only focuses on the first element, which is the knowledge element, the knowledge of a likely investigation.
But I guess going back to the Chief's very first question, anyone who commits a crime in Ohio has to have in the back of their head thinking, there's going to be an investigation here.
Well, no, not necessarily. I think the Cavalier Court in the Second District, the example they gave posited that, and I disagree with that respectfully. The Cavalier Court, their example was, say a person has marked lanes. They run across the lane or they run a traffic signal. They know they did it. They know they committed an unmistakable crime. They go home and they park their car in their garage. Now, does that mean that they intended to conceal their car and vehicle from a likely investigation? I don't think it equates to that. I think you have totally separate facts. Straley is the same way. I don't think it meets all three elements of the offense of tampering with evidence. You have to have the knowledge of the likely investigation, you have to have the actual concealment, and you have to have the purpose of impairing the value of that evidence during the investigation.
I guess I'm asking it from a practical matter because we're trying to make a ruling for everybody rather than this case.
Sure, and I would agree
with
that.
I'm just trying to figure out what value the tampering has because at sentencing they merge, correct?
No, not necessarily. Under
Why?
State versus Ruff, there has to be a separate animus. There can be a different, you know, we have cases all the time that tampering does not necessarily merge with the other crime.
Counsel, wasn't this originally in drug activity? The idea of tampering would be, you know, there's the search and seizure, the knock at the door, and the individual going and flushing the drugs down the toilet.
Sure.
I mean, that's the typical tampering with evidence.
Right.
There's no question there. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
And now we're going to the issue of this unmistakable crime that I don't think Straley was even considering. Would you agree, though, that the state Straley case does suggest that at the time of concealment, that's when the knowledge is important?
I would agree with that, and I don't think, again, I think Straley's limited on its facts. The facts in Straley were a lot different than the facts in this case. You had one driver in the vehicle in Straley. As far as the unmistakable crime, if you had applied the unmistakable crime idea in that case, she may have known there was an unmistakable crime that she possessed the drug.
Assume
she doesn't. Then fine. I think the result in Straley is still the same. I don't think that they're incompatible. I think Straley and the decision in this case are totally compatible. They're totally different sets of facts.
Why do you think that in the mind of these three men and this young woman that it was likely that there was going to be an investigation? Why? I mean, I think there's a big difference between in case of an investigation, in case of a stop, okay, because that's what it's going to have to start with. In case of a stop, you know, let's conceal this. As opposed to, and I think that then there's a huge leap to in the likely event of a stop. And that's where you have to start, right? At the potential for the stop, because that's when the investigation would start.
For me to answer your question, I think every court that would consider this would need to look at the entire set of facts before them. So if you look at the facts in this case, you had gentlemen who had been to Detroit earlier that day. The evidence showed that they had receipts that they had been to Detroit earlier that day. They came to Middletown. Chelsea Berry had come to Middletown with a friend. They were there to pick up these people who had come from Detroit. Based on all the evidence, the knowledge that this investigation was likely, I think, is constructive knowledge, and it should be imputed to these people.
Under what did you just say that would indicate that there's a likelihood of an investigation?
Well, the evidence at trial came from the defendant's mouth that she was told, why else do you think you're here?
Okay, but a likelihood of investigation because men traveled from Detroit to Middletown, that's not unusual.
Men traveling carrying drugs is the norm.
Well, actually, yeah, I'm thinking that there's so much that gets by that isn't. I'd say there's more that gets by than gets interdicted.
Well, and the troopers are trained well in these interdiction efforts, and we have a lot of this, as Justice O'Neill pointed out. This is a frequent occurrence, and as mentioned earlier, the state wants a bright line test. We would like to know what can we or can't we do? How can we instruct our officers in conducting this interdiction effort? Because we are trying to stop this drug traffic and this pipeline from Dayton through Portsmouth to Huntington.
And apparently, she was driving over the line.
I think she was driving over the line, and there was a loud exhaust. So there was
loud exhaust.
It was a good stop as far as that
went. Sure. Nobody wasn't obviously pretextual.
Right.
And then there was a smell of marijuana.
There was a smell of marijuana.
Okay. So, you know, the fault therein is get a better car if you're going to be in the drug transportation business. Make sure everything is working in tip-top shape and doesn't draw attention. You know, drive responsibly, and it's a good idea not to smoke dope while you're doing the drive.
We can all agree with that.
Yeah. But fortunately for the state of Ohio, as I said earlier, these people are not the brightest, and they are involved with marijuana and other drugs that maybe impair their judgment. I still can't get from all of that to the likelihood of an investigation.
Your Honor, all I can tell you is based on the facts that I've read in this case, I think that everybody in that car knew an investigation was likely. There was no other reason for them to do what they did.
Let me ask a different question, a different way. What made it likely? What's the evidence you have of the likelihood while these people are in Middleton, Ohio, that they're going to be arrested?
Well, again, Chelsea Berry's own testimony.
Pardon me, please?
Chelsea Berry's own testimony. She was told by the people she was with.
Yeah, don't say, why do you think you're here? She was there because they were going to give her some of the drugs.
Exactly.
And she was the mule, and she was the one who was going to conceal it in her in a body cavity.
Right, and she knew that because they told her when she
that
questioned.
That doesn't mean that the authorities are aware and are likely going to conduct an investigation. Because she's going to conceal something.
Well,
there's a disconnect there.
There is a disconnect.
Maybe I'm not expressing it strongly enough, but them telling her to conceal it and her realizing that's why she's there doesn't translate to the knowledge on the part of the authorities who are going to conduct a traffic stop and investigate this situation.
I don't know.
And there's some evidence that's not there. That's what we're asking you about.
I would agree with you, but I would disagree as far as I don't know that the knowledge requirement in the tampering statute is based off of the knowledge of the officers. I think it's the knowledge of the defendant.
Well, here, the burden that the state has is to demonstrate that this individual, knowing that an investigation is either in progress or likely to be instituted, will alter. She didn't alter it.
Correct.
She didn't destroy it.
Correct.
She didn't remove it to a place. And while in Middleton, she concealed it. That's all she did. But the other parts of that statute that you are obligated to demonstrate beyond a reasonable doubt is that knowledge of an official proceeding or the likelihood of it to be instituted.
And that's part of the reason we're here is because of the constructive knowledge that was imputed to her because of the unmistakable crime that she committed by possessing and trafficking the drugs.
So if we have another vehicle in Middleton, Ohio, and they are now, as we speak, concealing marijuana in a false bottom in the trunk of the vehicle, are they guilty of tampering right now, in your view?
I think if you have the other two elements of the offense, yes. The concealment, if they have it in a separate compartment that's a secret compartment,
yes.
You have the concealment. And I definitely think you have the purpose to make the evidence unavailable because they're hiding it. It comes back to...
But where's the evidence of the likelihood of the investigation being conducted in another county in the state? Maybe they're going to drive it right to Columbus. What's the evidence that they would have that there'll be an investigation by the sheriff of Franklin County?
Well, I think that's the ultimate issue here with the unmistakable crime idea is what if you don't buy into that, then I would have to agree with you. But I believe that the unmistakable crime idea here that's valid in five districts is a valid tool, and the court can use a jury instruction.
Well, if you're in the mood for agreeing, let's see how far the agreement can go. Does it have to have a temporal or a geographic expectation?
I think that was answered partially in Straley. I think the Straley decision said that it is judged at the time of the concealment. What we also have here in this case, and counsel...
I'm trying to be narrow and I'm trying to see where we agree.
Sure.
I mean, for example, if they're driving down the road and they see a police stop and then they conceal, everybody would agree. We've got time and we've got place.
Right.
But I think I'm asking Justice O'Donnell's question in a different way. Are you saying they have to expect an investigation anywhere, anytime?
If they are committing an unmistakable crime, yes.
Next Tuesday? Next month?
Okay, maybe not the time element.
I would counsel, with respect to the facts here, the other three in the car were... Where's their residence? I don't recall.
I believe they were all from out of town. I think some of them were from Detroit. One of them may have been either from Huntington, West Virginia, or Chesapeake, Ohio. He was a friend of Chelsea Berry's. I'm not sure. He lived in Southern Ohio, I believe.
So if they're stopped and asked for identification, somebody's going to have Detroit as an address.
Exactly.
And they're on Route 23?
Correct. And false names were given for two of these individuals during the stop. So,
and these folks apparently know when they're getting in the car, we're going to smoke dope on the way over there. Now, given that circumstance, if they're stopped, they could reasonably expect that there's going to be a drug search.
I would agree with that.
Right?
I definitely agree with that.
So isn't that really what their concern was? It wasn't knowledge of crime. It was knowledge of, if a stop sign's blown or a red light's blown or whatever, there's some traffic incident, the cops or patrol are going to want to go over this car with a fine-tooth comb
exactly,
for drugs.
Which is why Chelsea Berry was in the car with them. And the other thing I'd like to address with the rest of my time, there was discussion by opposing counsel that the only argument at trial...
So I guess the follow-up or where I'm going with that is they don't know that anything's going to happen. They just know if they get stopped.
They're preparing for the...
They're preparing for the if.
Yes.
It's not a knowledge that it's going to happen.
And I think that comes under the definition of likely. We're talking about probability versus possibility. These folks know there's a probability that they could possibly be stopped, especially if they're smoking marijuana and they have other drugs in the car.
But if we follow the Fourth District's reasoning, you don't even get to the facts. That's where I'm having trouble.
Many of your answers rely
on facts.
I think you do get to the facts. The other two elements of the offense still have to be proven. And during opening statement and during closing argument, the state of Ohio presented the argument that this was an ongoing course of conduct.
But that's not what the Fourth District said. What the Fourth District said was, or with the jury instruction, when an offender commits an unmistakable crime, the offender has constructive knowledge of an impending investigation of the crime committed. There's no factual element in that instruction.
And that's only one sentence out of the entire body of the jury instructions would be my answer to that. I don't think that jury instruction, that one sentence taken out of context, I don't think that alone mandated that the jury was not going to remain the fact finder and have to find beyond reasonable doubt that all three elements of the offense were committed.
So we ignore the Fourth District's statement then that concealing drugs at the beginning of a drug run automatically constitutes constructive knowledge that an investigation is likely. The idea of constructive knowledge indicates that there isn't a factual determination.
Perhaps it needs to be cleaned up with a different jury instruction.
Counsel, it seems to me the overarching of what's going on here is you're asking us for an interpretation that would allow prosecutors in a wide range of crimes to do an add-on of this offense for a potential additional 3 years. And isn't that going in absolutely the opposite direction of where the political consensus seems to be among courts and legislative bodies, not just in Ohio, but across the nation, that when we're dealing with drug crimes, perhaps we've taken the sentences too long, too far out. We're locking up people who need treatment and doing it for too long a period of time. And here you have somebody who's already facing a mandatory 6, and you're asking for an add-on of another 3. So, and you're asking us to decide a case and write an opinion in a way which gives a green light to prosecutors across this state for an add-on in not just this case, but literally thousands of cases.
Well, Your Honor, I believe this is valid law in at least 5 districts already. So I don't think the state is asking for you to specifically rule that way so we can do something we can't already do. I think we already are charging these charges. We're just asking for clarification whether we can do this. If we can't, then we won't. As to the other part of your question, yes, this is a tool that we use in these drug cases. because Chelsea Berry was carrying over 500 hits of heroin on her. Like I said earlier, there's no gray area. She knew that was a crime. She knew they were possibly sending this poison into our streets.
But nobody is arguing that that wasn't, in fact, her knowledge. Everybody, as you say, it's unmistakably a crime. All four people in that car were unmistakably committing a crime.
Correct.
Okay. But define beyond, you would have to find beyond a reasonable doubt that Ms. Berry had constructive knowledge, actually, I would say real knowledge of an impending investigation of the crime committed. In other words, beyond a reasonable doubt, I'm, you know, almost certain that I'm going to be stopped here. Isn't that what you're saying?
I think that the jury still has to make a finding of all three elements beyond a reasonable doubt. If they're instructed on this unmistakable crime, they can still make the finding
There's any doubt that she was committing a crime. Unmistakably, she was committing a crime. The question is, how do you leap over to the tampering to enhance that with additional time?
I guess that's the question that the court has to decide here.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Hardwick, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Nurse. We buy homeowners insurance even though we don't think it's likely that our houses will burn down. We wear seatbelts even though we know it's not likely we're going to get an accident. People take precautions against very unlikely but potentially catastrophic events.
And then, you know, you light every candle in your house and you go to bed. I mean, you leave the embers burning in the fireplace and, oh, you got a gas leak. You know, Your example, I think my example is a little more akin to the behavior your clients were engaged in than the responsible homeowner.
Well, I think, and I didn't say she's a responsible homeowner, but the point is when you face a potentially catastrophic risk, you take precautions against it, even though that risk is extremely unlikely, the risk of your house, and that's what they did here. And there's a different, the tampering with evidence statute is not a statute that says we all have to assist law enforcement and tell them, look, I've committed this crime, here it is. It says that once you know an investigation is ongoing or is about to start, that's the trigger for your duty to at least not stand in the way of law enforcement. And that's not what, and Ms. Berry in this case did not stand in the way of law enforcement. She just took what was, she took a precaution against a very
But once she was apprehended, she stood in the way by denying several times that she was carrying drugs.
Yeah, and if the state had charged this as obstruction of justice or some sort of obstruction charge, we'd be in a different...
You don't think you can get to tampering at that juncture?
I don't think you should, at least, because it requires a concealment, and there is no concealment when you're just talking, and I think that the actus reus of that case is...
The concealment already happened.
Right. Yes, it's done, it's passed. And the state here didn't make that part of their case. And this is a case where, again, I go back to the Bill of Particulars. It says that she told, that she was pulled over, she told the police officers where it was, and then voluntarily gave it to them. The only time the state mentioned that she was still covering, that she lied to the police officers at all was when they were, and this is in my reply brief, is when they were trying to prove that she wasn't coerced into, coerced by her co-defendant, because that was her trial defense. I was coerced by these three men. This wasn't a voluntary act. If the state wanted to charge that, they should have charged that. They should have argued to the jury, and they shouldn't come up with a new theory before this court.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, gentlemen. You'll be notified of our decision. Thank you.